Welcome back, Tiger fans, to Rockin' Radio's football podcast. I'm Nate Edwards. That's Nathan Hurst. This is Before the Box Score. Spring football is among us, which means there's not a lot of talks about. But that's okay, because there's guys in pads hitting each other at the University of Missouri. So it's kind of like football season. It's not as good. Nathan Hurst, how are you doing, sir?
I'm doing great. I can hear the pads snapping from across town, or at least I want to feel like I can hear them. So at least there's some football-like activities going on. And the summer will be video game football-like activities. So we've got some ways to bridge ourselves to August,
yeah.
At least currently and in the future. So it won't be the longest offseason in the history of mankind.
No. And the good news is the older you get, the shorter the offseason is. So, hey, this is great. A lot shorter than it was in 07 and 08 when I felt like, you know, I spent 20 lifetimes waiting for those seasons to come around. So it's all good. Speaking of all good, do we have a athletic director yet? No, we don't. But do we know that the people are going to be looking for it? Finally, yes, we do. That's been really the question since Desiree Reed-Francois left it, again, because the basketball team suck. It's okay, well, when are we going to get a new AD? And it's been pretty hush-hush until today when they released that, like, all right, well, you want to know who our new athletic director is, so here is your committee. And here is what we're looking at. We've got Bob Blitz, who is most famous for making bank in billable hours for not keeping the Rams in St. Louis. And given the fact that L.A. doesn't care and St. Louis is sad, it feels like Bob Blitz really won the St. Louis Rams moving away. But anyway, go billable hours. Bob Blitz, he's a curator, current chair of the search committee. We got Robin Wanamaker, who's also on the board of curators. Todd Graves, curator. Jeff Lehman, curator. Pam Brezina, which is a faculty athletics representative. Ryan Rapp, an executive vice president for finance and operations. Mike Campeter, who is a civic leader. Richard Miller, an alumnus. Don Walsworth, also an alumnus. Mark Mangini, who's a general counsel. And then Tim McIntosh, who's HR. And they are going to be working with a search firm called Turnkey ZRG, which at first I thought was Turkey ZRG, which is a much cooler name for a search firm, but it's Turnkey. That committee is going to be working with them to find our new athletic director. What are our thoughts, Nathan Hurst? What am I supposed to take away from this?
Well, while Turkey would be a cooler name, it's probably hard to get people to pick up the phone and answer it seriously when that's all that search firms do is make phone calls in your name or not so much in your name. It's nice to see that there finally has some sort of movement in the right direction. It's been, you know, more than a week, what, almost 2 weeks now since she announced that she was leaving. Mm-hmm. So we're taking the steps. It was pretty obvious they're always going to hire a search committee because once again, lawyers have to make money. And so that's a way to do that. The search committee is not much of a surprise. The four curators are the four that were on the athletics oversight committee. That was part of the whole hubbub surrounding Desiree Reed-Francois leaving. So it's no surprise that they're also on this because those are the four that are obviously the most invested in athletics, apparently. And then you got three big donors, successful businessmen, Richard Miller, big successful businessman and longtime, big time donor to the department. Same with Don Walsworth, Mike Campeter as well. He's the president of Diamond Pet Foods, which is a very large dog food company and probably has some deep pockets, I would imagine. So in some ways, I mean, are those three folks going to be making final decisions? No, but it's nice to get them on board. They may be making donations in the future, so it'd be nice that they're behind, behind whoever they decide to go with. But I mean, ultimately the decision is going to be the board of curators. They're the ones who have to vote on it and pass it. So those are the ones that matter the most. One thing I thought was interesting was the search firm that they hired, Turnkey ZRG. The wife of head basketball coach Dennis Gates is a high up in the management of that.
Okay.
Firm. So I don't know if that means anything. It probably doesn't. It was always a well-known and well-respected search firm before she was hired in the last year or two. So I don't think that necessarily means anything, but it's, you know, there's connections here and there.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all about who you know. I guess the thing for me is clearly they are not in a rush to do this, which I'm not saying you should be, given how the last three athletic directors ended up. Maybe it is worth taking a couple of weeks to make sure you've got the right person. And again, not saying that they rushed it in the past three times. Like, you know, you just, you want to make sure that you've got your right person. They fully understand the optics of and the circumstances of the job. We talked about this in the last show. You've got to understand, whatever your political leanings, it is a conservative board of curators. That tends to mean we're not going to give you money to make you good. We're going to give you money to get an ROI. And as long as the athletic director understands that and is clear on that, the board is clear and they're clear, then it shouldn't be a problem when they say fund football, invest in football, put the money in football, everything else will shake out afterwards. Like, just everybody be upfront about that. And I think we should be all okay. But yeah, they're in no rush. And, you know, I don't know what that means. We speculated a little bit about coaches. Obviously, Dennis Gates is going to be fine. Robin Pingenton might be the biggest winner of this. I don't know if the interim AD is going to fire her, or if the new guy is going to come in, that new guy or new girl is going to come in and immediately fire a coach. Like, I don't know if that's good. So she might have bought herself another year. I don't know. But everybody else seems to be in pretty good footing, especially Eli Drinkwitz, who doesn't answer to the athletic department at all. So, yeah, maybe this is just you have the time, so take the time and make sure that you vet everybody and find the right person who understands the job and the parameters of the job as well. I have not heard any other rumors of names being dropped other than, you know, just it's the same list getting bandied about until you hear someone say, me and my family are invested in Virginia Tech or whoever they're, you know, looking after. So it's been pretty quiet on that front, other than the fact that we have a committee and we know the search firm. So I was kind of hoping we'd have one by now, but I guess that's just not going to be the case. And
yeah, if they're just getting to the search firm hiring now, I mean, we're at least a couple of weeks out, I have to think, unless they already know who they're going to go after and they just want to have some sort of legal cover to reach out and start negotiations. Now I feel like they probably will do a larger search if they're taking the trouble to name this huge committee and name and hire a search firm and everything. And that's fine. Other than the women's basketball coach, there's really no big actions that the AD would need to take anytime soon. Because you may have the interim AD fire the women's basketball coach, because you're certainly not going to have the interim AD hire the next one.
Right.
So you would want to act on that before the transfer portal gets up and going in women's basketball. Not that I'm anything of an expert in women's basketball, but that seems to be the case in just about any sport these days.
Yeah,
it's got to, everything's got to revolve around the transfer portal window. So if that is something that ends up, I know that Pinchton's got one more year left on her contract. Mm-hmm. You know, not that you ever want to be coaching on your last year of a contract for anyone. That's not going to set anyone up for success. So it really wouldn't make a lot of sense to keep her, but that's for another day. I bet in the next couple of weeks, by that point, the women's season will be over. Mm-hmm. They'll hire someone. They can come in, spend a week or two while the NCAA tournament's going on to figure out what they want to do and go from there.
Yeah. I don't know what the optics are. I don't know what professional courtesy is, but it would make a lot of sense to me to just have the interim fire whoever needs to get fired. Save everybody the headache. I'm like, hey, you know, you want to do the job? Here, go do the job. Earn your paycheck a little bit. Save it for the new person to make the hire. So, again, I don't know what the optics or professionalism is on that, but that's how I would do it. And, yeah, maybe you need to, like, I don't know, someone going to come after our gymnastics coach. He seems to be pretty good. So, I don't know if whatever. They seem to have time. That seems to be okay. So that's what we're going to do. We're going to bide our time, and we'll report whatever we hear when we hear it, which might be a while, but we will find out. The other stuff that's happening, again, we're talking about stuff that is Missouri football adjacent. We'll get to the actual Missouri football stuff in a little bit, but a little thing called the NFL Combine went down last week. Our own Quentin Corpiel was there covering it himself. Seemed like he had a great time in Indianapolis. One thing I know about sports writers, they love Indianapolis, because you go there, you get off the plane, you almost immediately go into the hotel, and bam, Lucas Oil's right there. You don't have to go anywhere. You don't have to rent anything. It is like the perfect place to have an event and then get the heck out. So good for you, Indianapolis. But of course, Missouri had a contingent of Tigers there, one of its largest representations in the past 10 years. And they all seem to be doing pretty well. One guy in particular stood out as a surprise. The others were kind of what you expected. I don't know, Nathan, where do you want to start? You want to start with, I don't know, Quinn got a, did a pretty good job here. Let's go with Ennis Rakestraw. So heading into the combine, Ennis is like what? One of the top projected corners in the entire draft, which is, you know, obviously as Mizzou fans, we love him. He had two seasons shortened by injury, one almost completely. The other one, the last one, he missed a couple games. We all knew he was good. Now everyone else is finding out he's good. And now we're like, ah, man, wish we could have had him for even more games than what we had him. But he didn't really test as well as you would think. The Kentley Platt does prospects for the draft class out of all possible cornerback prospects. It looks like he starts from 1987 to 2024. And he rates prospects on a 0 to 10, 10 being the best. Ole Ennis Rakestraw scored a 4.79 out of a possible 10.0, mostly because of his 20-yard dash, is what I want to think, or his 40-yard dash is what I want to think. But, like, it still seems like he hasn't really tumbled that far in the draft stock. Is, I mean, do you think he's going to, or is this just, you know, he had a bad day and we still like him?
I think part of it was he was saying that he had re-injured or re-aggravated his groin, that he's been, you know, had been a problem for him for a while. So hopefully if he gets that taken care of, has a good pro day where he improves even just a little bit on his numbers, I think he'll be fine. He's got on tape really good stuff, and that's what scouts are going to really care about. He's proven he can cover and lock down top-end SEC wide receivers, and that's – you know, that's the biggest question mark for cornerbacks is, can you cover guys? And he's shown that he can do that. So whether he can, what his 40 yard dash in a straight line is, you know, as a quarterback, your cornerback, you're rarely going to be running 40 yards in a single direction. And if you are, usually that's a bad thing. So I'm not that worried about it for him, as long as he can turn around. I think he ran like a 4.5 something in the 40. He says his groin was hurt, so if he could bump that up to like a 4.48 or something in the pro day, just be kind of middle of the line on his numbers, I think he'll be fine. I haven't seen him drop on any of the mock drafts I've taken a look at either. So I think he'll be fine.
My fear is always the Denario Alexander problem, which is otherworldly talent and then mortal knees, hips, ankles, joints, whatever. Something that takes your athleticism and completely neuters it. And Ennis Rakestraw, and even, you know, Cody Schrader, who we'll talk about, both of those guys, I'm like, oh my God, just, I hope he can heal, because they're both very talented. And obviously if you can't go, then there's not a lot of point in you being in the NFL. So I really hope that they get a fair shot. They can heal up, get drafted, and get a chance to prove themselves at the highest level. Darius Robinson, obviously a fan favorite around these parts, both with the Mizzou fan base and Rock'em Nation proper. Everyone kind of found out how cool he was. I think a lot of the teams raved about his interview skills, his personality, how he was able to talk with them. And then on top of that, oh, by the way, he tested pretty well too. Now you can look at him in two different ways. One as a defensive end, as an edge rusher, and one as an interior lineman, which teams like him kind of as both. Obviously Missouri liked him as both. They played him in both spots. If you're going off of the ratings here, it looks like as a defensive end, he rated at like a 6.26 out of 10. As a defensive tackle, he rated as a 9.64. So I think there's a lot of both raw skill and then, of course, personality skill, and then just the love of the game that he was able to communicate. Darius Robinson's getting kind of like, you know, kind of shadowy first round potential question mark. And I think his performance at the combine just continues to fan those flames.
Yeah, I think he did what he needed to do. I don't think he blew anyone away where he's going to jump up into the, you know, top half of the first round or anything. But he was solid enough in all the important things. I think his 40 might have been a little slow, but once again, if you're a defensive end, you're not going to be running 40 yards in a straight line at any point. So that shouldn't be a concern, too big of a concern for scouts. One thing I thought that was interesting, he was saying that he was disappointed with his bench total, where you're repping 225 pounds as many times as you can. Mm-hmm. He said that he blamed his low total, which I think he came out with 20, which I'd be lucky if I could do two, I think, or one for that matter. I could probably get one, but that's that. He was disappointed with 20, But he said the bench was wobbly and like not on the even ground. And he vowed that at Mizzou Pro Day, he was going to do way, way better than that. So I'm actually very interested to see how much better he did, if he can put his money where his mouth is there. Because I don't think I've heard anyone complaining about the bench press setup at the combine before. So I hope he's able to put that money where his mouth is. But I think we talked about it a few weeks ago, but we knew coming to the combine, the most impressive thing for him was going to be his interviews. He's going to get in there. He's going to show his leadership. He's going to show, what kind of a locker room guy is. It's something that we've known for a long time. And that's just not something scouts are going to be privy to until this phase of the process. And that's not a surprise at all. I think that alone is going to keep him, if not in the first round, very high to second round. Someone's just going to want that guy in their locker room.
Yeah. Chris Abrams-Drain, again, he's kind of a small, kind of lighter. You would expect him to be fast. And I don't think they're as fast as he wanted to be, as people expected him to be. But he's getting another crack at it at Missouri's Pro Day. And same for Javon Foster. I think, his 40 was okay. And he seemed to be doing okay. But both of those guys, they kind of fluctuate. Chris Abrams-Drain and Javon Foster, I've seen them a lot of different projections. I'm not sure, how much this is going to affect it. But both of those guys seem like second-day kind of draft picks anyway. Did you see anything that concerns you of them not getting drafted? Or did you see anything like, oh, maybe potential sneak into a higher round?
No, I think they're pretty much – they kind of just solidified, especially Foster. He just is solid across the board. He didn't wow anybody. I don't think he was going to wow anybody, but he's going to get drafted. I don't know if he'll even be a second day pick, but I mean, we're talking, I think probably fourth-ish round, which might be a good spot for him. Go to a place that needs some depth. He can spend a couple years learning and getting on the field. Abrams-Drain, it's really hard to tell. I mean, I think it just depends on what a team's looking for. If they're okay with a smaller guy he ran a 4.44 40. That's pretty fast. I mean, it's not lightning, but it's solid for a cornerback, but he's a little undersized. So maybe someone's looking for a guy who can come in and play nickelback to start and maybe transition in a year or two to an outside cornerback type of guy. And he's had experience playing as a slot defender and been very good at it before they moved him outside. So as so much with the draft goes, it just depends on, it only takes one team and what team's looking and what team is looking for who and what kind of player. So, I mean, Abrams-Drain could go third round, maybe, if there's a guy if there's a team that wants him, or he could drop and it actually would be a total steal in the fourth or fifth round, I think. But they'll both get drafted. No problem at all.
Yeah. Tyron Hopper was at the combine. He did not test at all for anything, still nursing that injury. So I know that was disappointing for him. I don't know if he's going to be able to be ready to go from Mizzou's Pro Day. But he was able to interview and, really nothing stood out from there. So I'm assuming he's going to be fine. The other defender that was there and kind of the last of the defenders was Jalen Carlisle. And it seems like he was the biggest surprise of the NFL combine, at least from people who were talking about it. Not only how he was so bulked up, 221 pounds or something like that, but not only that, as a bigger safety, which is what he always played at MSU, is he fast? I mean, he did his 40-yard dash, and I forget what he ended up at. It was
– I think it was at 4.5.
4.5, yeah. And
for a dude that's 220-plus pounds, that is flying.
Okay, so apparently it's 227, which is – that is linebacker sized, and he's a safety, and 4.5 second 40-yard dash. So I think a lot of people started recognizing who this dude was. That will get you recognized. And for, all of the defenders who Mizzou sent, Carlisle is, no offense to him, kind of felt like an afterthought, but he has clearly put in the work to bulk up and get fast. And I don't know what that's going to mean, but very impressive showing by that guy.
Yeah, he's always had the physical tools. He's always been a really big, fast dude. I think his struggles have been on the mental side of the game. Is he looking in the right place? Is he where he needs to be on the field to prevent big plays? He's always been a big hitter. I mean, he's a big guy. If he gets his body into you, you're going to go down. And at least earlier in his career, he'd caused quite a few fumbles, too, just because he just lay the wit on people. I think the potential switch to linebacker for him would be huge. One comp I saw, and I mean, he's not Fred Warner, but one comp I saw kind of comped him to Fred Warner in that he could be the style of linebacker who can cover easily cover a tight end out in the pass game, cover running back coming out of the backfield, but have those elite coverage skills for a linebacker. Now, is he going to be there, being there on third and short? Maybe not. He's not going to be a gap filler, but he could be a very valuable piece for an NFL team who's looking looking to stop pass first offense and needs a guy that can move all over the field and be very flexible in terms of where you line him up. Maybe you line him up as a box safety as well, or a linebacker in a much lighter box set.
Yeah. I mean, if you can't be elite, be versatile, right? Be able to do a lot of different things. Because, you know, the roster of an NFL team is half, less than half of what a college team is. You can stock dudes and put them in whatever you want in college, but in the NFL, you got to make your choices wisely. And to have that versatility plus some raw athleticism, that could get you a spot, man. You know, you might not be the best player, the smartest player, the hardest working. Like, if you can do a lot of things really well at a high level, then they'll take a chance on you. And at the end of the day, that's all you're really looking for. So kudos to him. I hope it works out for old JC. Last two on here, you know, Cody Schrader, obviously just the Schrader story continues. You know, his combine was fine. Now, I think part of the issue was that on his first 40-yard dash, he apparently re-aggravated the hamstring, which, as you know, that has been a problem for Cody basically all 2023. I remember it was like after the LSU game, they said, yeah, you know, they had to like drain blood out of his calf, which I'm like, okay, that can't be normal. Or if it is, why is blood in your calf? Like, you know, it's not great. So it sounded like he re-aggravated the injury on his first 40-yard dash. He did it again. You know, he was like an eighth of a second off from his first one. So, I mean, look, Cody Schrader is going to be approaching the draft process just like he has approached his entire football career at a disadvantage. He's short. He's stocky. He's not going to do anything as well as any of the others, but it's his hard work. It's his commitment. It's his drive. The intangibles, right? The love of the game. Like, if someone gives him a shot, he's gonna reward that person. I just don't know if it's going to happen. And I don't think he's going to turn any heads with his athletic part of the combine, but it seemed to be a lot of people were talking about his answers and his love of the game. Nathan Hurst, you don't get drafted for your love of the game, but what are Cody Schrader's odds here?
Yeah, I don't think it's not a surprise that didn't wow at the combine when you're talking about just the physical traits. That's the reason he went to Truman State for 4 years. He doesn't have those physical traits that pop out at you just looking at him. He's going to be a grinder, and he's just got to find one team that will give him a chance, and he will get in there and grind and grind and grind away. But all he's got to do is find one team, and he's got to find a team, or a team will find him. Whether that's in getting drafted in the seventh round, or probably better for him to sign as an undrafted free agent than getting drafted in the seventh round, where he can find a team that has a hole at running back, or it isn't stocked up with four dudes that all run 4.3 40s already. And can get onto the onto a practice squad, get into those expanded rosters and summer workouts, and I think at that point that's where coaches are going to love him, and they're going to not want to get rid of him, and that's what he's going to have to do. He's going to have to make coaches not want to get rid of him until they all of a sudden want to keep him, and then they're going to want to play him eventually as well. So that's his path. That's always been his path. So could he get drafted in the sixth round? Maybe. If he doesn't go in this by the sixth round, I kind of hold out hope for him that he doesn't get drafted and is able to keep that, keep his vibe going because I think that'll play better for him anyway.
Yeah. If you're not privy to NFL stuff, and I'm not really an NFL guy, but I know enough to Hurst's point, once you get into the sixth round, seventh round, are there signing bonuses? Yes, but you're getting drafted into a position where you have no control. It's almost better. And a lot of agents and players will tell you this. It's actually better, instead of getting drafted in the sixth or seventh round, to go ahead and just go the undrafted free agent round, because then you can pick your spot to a certain extent. Obviously, there's going to be teams that are going to show some interest, and you can pick which one of those you want to go to. So a player and his agent can sit down and go, okay, so like realistically, what are we looking at here? What's the roster look like? What does a coach like to do? And you can, you know, of all the, you know, free agent offers that you're given, you can just pick the one that's going to suit you best. Whether that's, you know, like you said, the position group is really light or with a bunch of rookies, or it's just a philosophy that you like, an offensive or defensive style that you like, you know, whatever the case is going to be, at least you have your shot. You can call it. And you know, even some free undrafted free agents get signing bonuses. So like, it's fine. I mean, you're not going to make $1 million your first year, but you'll make league minimum, which is pretty dang good if you can stretch your money well. So, yeah, that's going to be probably going to be the case for Cody. And even in his combine interviews, he talked about how he made it an art of like being noticed by coaching staffs. He said he would park his truck next to the strength coach at Mizzou so that he knew that every time he'd show up, because Cody was there at 5 before he even got there, he'd see the truck and go, ah, who is that? Because if you don't know this, strength coach has way more relationships with the players than the coaches do, because he has more time with them. So he's got a better pulse of the team. He's got, you know, better idea of what these guys are going through. And so if you can make a relationship, a connection with the strength coach, that's your first start. Cody knew that, and that's what he did. In lieu to going from 8th on the depth chart to 1st. Now there's a lot of other things he did: work hard, play well, that sort of thing. But, apparently he knows what to do to get noticed. So yeah, just give him a shot and he's going to be fine. The last guy on here, our big, beautiful thicker, Harrison Mevis, who I don't know if Mizzou undersold him or he's just had a couple of weeks of not playing football offseason diet, but he is 5'11", 241 pounds. Just beautiful. Get heavier, man. Arm span of 30 inches, hands of 8.8. Why am I reading this? No one cares. Wingspan of 74.38 inches. He's just a monster kicker. And I don't know if we know he didn't run the 40. I don't know if he did any of the
tests. That's a travesty. It's a travesty that he didn't run the 40. Come on. Don't teams want to be able to see if he can cover kickoffs, right? What?
Oh my God.
Let's see that man sprinting full speed.
I always thought it was very sad that we never featured Mevis in any kind of trickeration plays. Obviously, Luke Bauer got a pass, and I've seen Mevis field kicks and catch passes, and they never got him out there to do that. And that, yeah. And so we don't even get to see him run. Very sad.
Alabama ran that faded fake field goal against Clemson where the kicker was the lead blocker. This would have been the one time where that would have actually maybe worked.
That's the guy. Maybe in the NFL. I don't know how often kickers get drafted. I feel like that's more of a undrafted free agent pick anyway, but what do you think for Mevis?
Yeah, I mean, every year I think there's one or two that get drafted. I know the 49ers drafted a kicker in like the 3rd round last year, and he kind of went on to be a flop. But I guess he made a couple kicks in the Super Bowl. But there's never more than one or two a year. I don't think he will be drafted. He'll certainly get a shot somewhere. And once again, that is almost a good thing to be an undrafted free agent, because you can pick your spot to an extent, find where there is going to be a battle, and where you're confident that you can beat out the two or three other guys that they're bringing on for that spot. So he'll get a shot. It's such a crapshoot with kickers in the NFL. There are 30 jobs or 32 jobs, and that's it. And there's hundreds of guys that have been college kickers and are competing for that. So the competition's outrageous. So you never really know who's going to stick or who's not, but he'll get a shot.
Who was the last kicker drafted first overall? In the first round. Who was the last kicker to be drafted in the first round?
Was Martin Gramatica, or not Martin? Who was it?
Sebastian Janikowski.
Oh, of course, the Raiders.
17th pick.
Always.
First round. 5'11", 260 pounds.
Hey, well, he only has 10 pounds. So we'll cut 10 spots off of that. We'll put Mevis at the in the 20s, in the high 20s, and that sounds like a good spot to me.
Don't rule it out, man. Don't rule it out. Well, we'll see what happens. Fate is calling us. That was a 2000 NFL draft. So 24 years later, could the biggest kicker in college football get drafted once again in the first round? I don't know. We shall find out. So congratulations to you all. Of course, we'll see them do this all over again in Mizzou's Pro Day, but yeah, we'll see how many scouts are actually there. But that'll be fun. Okay, let's talk about spring football. Not a lot, right? This is the problem. You know, they let media in for like 8 minutes, and they're doing Tiger Jacks and bending over and touching their toes. And you go, oh, I got to write 8 stories out of this. Oh, man. So, not a lot. Some guys have earned their numbers. You know, they get there's Smith, Caden Green. I think Zion Young earned his. Like a bunch of the transfers have pretty much all earned their numbers. You're not getting a lot out of this, and you probably aren't going to get a lot out of it. However, we did get one little nugget that I think we can talk about. And this is going to stretching the nugget. And it's going back to the conversation we had last week, but I don't care. It's the offseason still. We talked about the offensive line. You put out your best 5. We're pretty sure Caden Green's going to be at left tackle. We're pretty sure Armon Mbu's going to be at right tackle. We're pretty sure Connor Tolleson's going to be at center. It's figuring out the guards. And, of course, it sucks because your left side of your line was your best side of your line last year with the most talent and the most experience on that side. Well, Cameron Johnson, he of the adventurous false starts, that he got better at. He's flipping from right guard to left guard, or at least get him in at a test drive and see what it's like playing with Connor Tolleson to his right and Caden Green to his left. Now, for all of you who remember, he came from Houston. And if you don't know this, he played left guard at Houston. So when he comes to Mizzou, he went to right because you don't want to mess up the Xavier Delgado, Javon Foster chemistry, right? You didn't want to mess with that, which is fine. But if left side, best side, Caden Green's probably your most talented offensive lineman, and Cameron Johnson's your most experienced. So makes sense. Put him at his natural position, kind of beef up the left side. Nathan Hurst, we've talked about the offensive line last time. We don't need to rehash everything, but what does this potential pairing do in your mind for the rest of filling out the offensive line lineup card there?
I mean, I don't know if it makes much of a difference in terms of figuring out who that fifth spot's going to be filled by. If Johnson's more comfortable on the left side or is better on the left side, that makes sense. I mean, ultimately, it comes down to finding the best 5 guys to get on the field at the same time. The one thing you don't want to do is move a guy and then become worse at 2 spots. So, but if it seems like if at the very least as good on the left as on the right, if not better on the left than on the right, then that move makes sense, all the sense in the world. I'm not sure whoever ends up winning that final guard spot, it looks like it might be the right guard spot, whether that's Tristan Wilson or Logan Reichert. We've talked about that last week, but whoever that is, I mean, I don't think it's going to matter to that person too much which side guard they're going to be. No. Ultimately, the one risk there is if Johnson and Mbu built up some great chemistry. You mentioned the Delgado and Foster chemistry. If Johnson and Mbu had built up some good chemistry on that right side, are you risking kind of breaking that up? I don't know. That's something that Brandon Jones can figure out, and if he's comfortable with it, then I'm going to be comfortable with it. Yeah. He knows Cameron Johnson better than anyone. He coached him in 2 places now. So if he likes him at left guard more, then I'll trust that decision. I think whoever is going to win that right guard spot seems like probably the right guard spot. They were going to win whichever guard spot they were going to win. I don't think it changes sure. Who that person's going to be.
Yeah. I am curious if your best 5, stay with me here, your best 5 involves Armon Mbu going to guard and then opening up that right tackle spot. I don't know. I'm spitballing here, but you know, Mbu is a hell of a run blocker. He's pretty good at pass pro too, but like he was so good on the inside in 22 And he was so good that they would slap a number seven on him and put him on the outside and just run block as a giant tight end. Again, you know, we don't know how the coaches are going to view this and what it's going to involve, but you know, opening up that right side for some, you know, for some flexibility might mean that you swap out your tackle for the guard. I don't know what that's going to look like, but Mimbu is talented. He's athletic and he's versatile. So it kind of gives you another two spots to play with if you need to, instead of just one. When you're looking at left guard, because again, Kane and Green don't want to play guard, and I understand that you want to make that, get that first paycheck. So I get it, but I don't know. I'm really curious to see what that means.
It might be if whoever they like the best is a Reichert at right tackle or a Walters at right tackle. If that's going to be your best five, because Mimbu's got that flexibility, then you know that could very much be the case. I think probably based at least on who's seen the field in the past. I mean, Walters has had plenty of chances to win a starting job. Hasn't really happened yet. He's a great depth piece. But it probably is going to be someone winning that interior spot, unless Logan Reichert, who played tackle in high school, someone like him or Brandon Solis is just outstanding on the outside and they can't keep him off the field. Yeah. That would be the one time I could see them moving him in.
Yeah.
Moving Mimbu into the guard.
And you always want your blue chips to do well, because that means others take a look and go, okay, I can make it there. Logan Reichert's an interesting case. He's one of those guys who's a four-star in one service and a three-star in the other. And I think that really comes down to, like, he is so good as a run blocker. And he's kind of iffy in pass blocking. And not to say that can't get better. I can't tell you how many, like, rivals camps one-on-ones that I saw, like, featuring an edge rusher where Logan Reichert was the guy getting beat. And you're like, oh, God, okay. But he's a massive human being. And he's almost 19 years old, and you're like, all the potential for being a good tackle is right there. You can do it. So I don't know what that means. I'd love to see him jump into the lineup, but you know, just whoever wins the job, I want him to do well. And having a four-star as the backup, that probably speaks volumes about the talent that's in front of him, which is a good thing. Riker, go out there and win the job, baby. Show number 69, wear the rec specs, the glasses with the helmet like that. This has potential to be one of my favorite players because you got all these quirky little things about you. Also, you're 6'6", 375 pounds. I want you to just knock the hell out of everybody in the SEC. So anyway, point is, it's interesting. And I'm sure they're not done tinkering with the lineup until they even get into fall camp. So it's going to be a long discussion of who they figure out their top five. This is an interesting wrinkle to throw in there. I didn't hear anything else. Have we heard anything else? I feel like it's been pretty quiet.
I mean, as far as coming out of camp, that's about it. One thing you glossed over, Sterling Webb, who did win his number or earn his number 10, which is an awesome defensive tackle number.
Hell yeah.
I feel like that's even better than a single digit defensive tackle. I don't know why. Just this, like, a 10 just seems awesome as a defensive tackle number. I mean, Zion Young was better. He's number 9. Mm-hmm. That's a better edge number, kind of like Darius Robinson's number 6, so that's good. The three transfers that I didn't notice winning yet their number, earning their numbers, would be Harold Blood, Marcus Carroll, Toriano Pride. At least those are the ones that I wasn't able to track down having won yet. And then none of the freshmen who are playing this spring have won it yet, which isn't a surprise. I kind of would be surprised if any of them earned a number until August, but you never know. It seems very amorphous as to what the qualifications are for earning your number. I mean, do you have an especially good flatulence that day, or lack of flatulence? Like, what are you doing that is earning that number? It's, you know, fairly esoteric. We do know that Darius Smith was the first player to earn his number this spring. So that, you know, maybe that's a little hint into how his spring is going and trying to win a starting edge spot.
Yeah. I mean, it's a goofy, like, motivational ploy. That's kind of what Eli Drinkwitz is, which is fine, by the way. I'm not critiquing it. Like, there's a lot of different ways to motivate kids that are younger than 22. This is one of them. And if this is your thing, knock yourself out. They seem to like it, which I guess is really the only point. So, yeah, go ahead and do it. Yeah. Oh, by the way, what was Eli Drinkwitz on? He was on some show, and the We Stand on Business Josh comment to Coach Heupel of Tennessee this past season. Eli Drinkwitz went in a little bit more detail on that. I guess he had promised the defense that he would say it if they won. And of course they did. And in dominating fashion, thanks to the defense. And so he runs out to, you know, do the post game shake. And he says that there's a bunch of defenders behind him. You watch the video. I don't see it, but he does it. He's like, I can either look like a jackass on national television, or I can look like a jackass to my team. And I chose the first. And he gets it. He knows how to be a coach of a college football team, man. I thought it was a silly comment. I'm still not totally sure what Stand on Business is. Out of context, I can figure it out. It was kind of silly, but I liked it because we won. And it's just another one of those things, like Coach Drinkwitz, for whatever you want to critique his X's and O's, the dude's a good motivator. The dude's a good head coach.
Yeah, I mean, it shows that he knows how to motivate 20-year-old men, and that's 90% of the job. The other 10% is raising money to help attract more 20-year-old men to motivate. So as a head coach anyway, because he's much less in the day-to-day schematics of the team. So he needs to motivate these guys. It shows that he gets it. He knows how to do that. It does it come off sometimes to us on the outside as a little cringy or a little, you know, what is this guy doing? I don't know. It doesn't matter. It doesn't, who cares? He could be the most cringy man in the history of the world if he gets his team to win 11 football games a year. Sign me up for that. Sign me up for that for the next 30 years. I mean, there are many ways to do it. Gary Pinkel, very much on the other side of the coin, much more reserved and stoic, still found ways to get his team motivated. Probably not by saying we stand on business to coaches that he just beats while shaking their hand. But there are many ways to skin a cat. This is the way that Drink has found that works, and, you know, more power to him.
Pinkel was reserved and stoic unless he was playing Kansas. That man, he's got a special spot in my heart, man. Like he got it. He got it. The most angry I've ever seen him was the 2007 game. He lost it on a referee. I'm really just kind of like a bang, bang, you're going to miss it a lot of times kind of play. But like, he understood the moment. He understood the severity, and he lost it on a ref. And I'm like, oh yeah, Gary's feeling it. This is good. Man, I miss GP. He was great. Eli's great too, but I miss GP. All right. Nathan, you got some updates on visit. We're just kind of checking off news items of the day at this point. We got some official visits from some recruits. What do you got for us?
Yeah, well, we got one. I don't think it's even an official, can even be an official visit yet, but Jackson Cantwell announced today, actually, that he's going to be visiting again this weekend. Probably going to sit in on a couple of spring practices. If you don't recognize that name, he is a Mizzou legacy, not a Mizzou football legacy, but his father, Christian Cantwell, is an Olympic shot putter who was on the Tiger track team, won Big 12 tournament or Big 12 championships, qualified for the Olympic team, played or shot put in the Olympics in, I think, 2008 Olympics in Beijing, I believe. He might have even been a two-time Olympian. He was big-time world-class shot putter, very large human. He also procreates very large humans because Jackson Cantwell is, he's a sophomore in high school. So I'd imagine that puts him right about 16 years old. Mm-hmm. He's 6'8", 300 pounds as a 16-year-old. He's rated as he's a class of 2026. So he's not going to be going anywhere for a couple of years, but he's he's five-star. He's rated in the class of 26 as the number one offensive lineman in the country right now. Mm-hmm. And obviously then the number one overall recruit in Missouri. So he's a guy that, you know, I think the Tigers have a natural step up on just because of the Mizzou connection. He lives down in Southwest Missouri, and Arkansas really recruits Southwest Missouri really hard as well. So he's got offers from everywhere. He could go anywhere he wants in the country. He's in Missouri. He's got Missouri connections. So it would be really, really big to get him locked up. It'd probably still be another year because he's only a sophomore. So I don't think I guess he could verbally commit whenever he wants, but he can't take any official visits, I don't think, until his junior year.
Yeah.
But he's been around the program. he'll continue to be around the program. We just got to keep him in the fold and convince him that this is the place that he wants to be a Tiger, just like his dad was. Mm-hmm. So that would be awesome. So he'll be here this weekend. Hopefully they can put on a good show for him in the spring practices. Maybe they're having a scrimmage or something. That's why he chose this weekend to come. A couple other notes, not necessarily visits, but Matt Zollers, who's a four-star quarterback out of Pennsylvania, just this last week has dropped his final four teams that he's considering. He dropped it down to final four, and Mizzou is one of those four. It's us, Georgia, and then in-state Penn State and Pitt, which are both in-state schools. So very, very stout competition for this kid. He will be a senior this upcoming year, so he's class of 25. But it sounds like he's going to commit somewhere fairly soon. That could be in the next week. It could be in the next month. I don't know. But it sounds like he's getting pretty close to making a decision. It's interesting that we made the final cut for him. Mm-hmm. He's not from Missouri. I don't think, as far as I know, he doesn't have any direct connections to Missouri. We don't really recruit the state of Pennsylvania super hard, other than Harold Brantley. So, tough competition. I kind of think he's probably would be leaning toward Penn State, just because it's hard to get any kids out of Penn State out of Pennsylvania who have Penn State offers. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we can keep our fingers crossed. It would be really great to lock down the quarterback for this class early. This past class, it took a while. We had one, lost one, took a little while to get Aiden Glover on board. So if you can get to that quarterback, especially a four-star one, locked down in that class early, that'd be great. And then Isaiah Mosey, who's one of the top, if not the top, recruit out of Missouri this next year. I think he's not the top, he's one of the top recruits. He's from Lee's Summit, four-star wide receiver. His top four, Mizzou is in that with OU and Oregon and Tennessee. So I'm sure Drinkwitz is feeling pretty good about the chances for Mosey. We've gotten several players out of that high school recently as well. The problem is his dad just took a job at Central Florida as an assistant. I'm not sure I don't think he's an on-field assistant, but I could be wrong there. Anyway, his dad is moving to Orlando. I don't know if what that means for Isaiah, if he's also going to be moving to Orlando for his last year of high school, or if he's going to stick around in Kansas City. Not sure about that, but that may also play a big role in where he decides to play college ball. Does he stay where his dad's coaching? Who could blame him? And UCF, or does he go somewhere else? It makes it maybe a little less likely that he picks Mizzou. But I mean, we got in there early on him, so maybe we can pull that one out. So I'd expect his recruiting cycle to slow way down, mm-hmm. just with this, with a potential move, and having to reevaluate things, because I'm sure he probably wasn't considering UCF being far away, being not one of the as high up on the list of schools. But if his dad's going to be a coach there, it'd be kind of hard to turn down playing for your dad in high school and in college.
Yeah. So Jamar Mosey, I don't remember how long he's been at Lee Summit North, but he was an Oklahoma guy. And if you all remember, Lee Summit North, pretty good creator of Oklahoma football players. obviously that's changed recently, notably. But it always kind of felt like if it was a Lee Summit North kid, then Oklahoma was going to be in the mix. Now that's Kansas City in general, but certainly Lee Summit North. So part of that is good. Hey, we might get somebody else in LSN's head coaching chair. Maybe someone who's a little bit more pro-Mizzou or just not Oklahoma, which would be nice. Even though obviously Missouri made inroads the past couple of years. For as far as Isaiah's recruitment, I don't know. Does he stay in Kansas City? Yeah. Does he follow his dad? If you're in Florida, all of a sudden everybody knows, everybody recruits Florida, right? Even Washington State recruits Florida. So like, you're not hiding from anybody. Does that open up his recruitment to other schools who haven't seen him? Does that make the competition stiffer? Does that mean, he gets rated higher because he's playing against better kids? So that doesn't mean more people are looking at, like, there's a lot of things that go with this. And, that's why it's so important for a kid to really think about, where do I want to play my high school ball? Everyone's different. I don't know if you want to coach, play for your dad who's a coach, or maybe you liked him, maybe you hated it. I don't know, but it's too tough, too early to tell. But it seems like, the younger Mosey is a fan of Mizzou, so we'll see what happens there. I pulled up Christian Cantwell's page on Mizzou Athletics. It's ancient, by the way. Do you want to guess how big the Elder Cantwell was at his plane heights?
Probably 6'5", 320.
Man, that is super close. 6'5", 340.
Ooh, a little bigger than that.
Yeah. So, of course, you know, and then he is Cantwell, the younger, is past that at a younger age. But just as a reminder, he was in the 2008 Summer Olympics. So that's Beijing. He got silver in shot put. But then he's got a gold and a bunch of other stuff. The World Championships in 2009 Berlin was a gold. 2004 in Budapest, that was gold. 2008 Valencia, gold. 2010 Doha, gold. All of these are in shot put. So, like, dude knows how to move a stone with his arm. And I think
strong.
He's very strong. Big strong dude. Made another big strong dude. That's always a good thing. Do we have time? Yeah, we got time. It's only 50 minutes. We're good. Hurst, did you know there's a college football video game that's coming out this summer? Are you aware of this?
I have been aware. I've been waiting. I've been sitting in a dark room with the lights off for the last 10 years. you know, waiting until it comes on. So the light will come on as soon as that game comes out here in a, I guess we're four months out.
Give or take. Yeah. I don't think there's been an official release date, but it tends to be summer. It's usually July, right around when the speaking circuit picks up.
When the SEC day, you know, SEC media days kind of picks up. That's like that time frame.
Yeah, everyone gets excited, so you buy the game. Luther Burden and Brady Cook have, I believe, confirmed that they're in the game, or at least I think that's what I know Luther has.
Cook did too. I think Theo East that he was too. I would be surprised if any Mizzou players didn't take
well,
it on.
I mean, that's the thing. They have until April 30th. And of course, getting a 19-year-old college man to sign anything and turn it in is a Herculean effort. But you also get $600 out of it and the game. So, like, there's some motivation there. Roster size, I think they're going to take, like, it's a first-come, first-serve basis. So if you're late, I don't know how that works. They will take walk-ons. Like, if there's a walk-on who's got significant playing time, they will consider you as well. All of these things I'm regurgitating from the great Matt Brown, which is one of, like, eight Matt Browns that covers college football. But this is the guy who has his own Substack, Extra Points, and is – like half his beat is the video game. And I don't think he likes it, but he is really good at reporting about it. So there's a lot of things. And, you know, this is, like you said, the last game came out right before the 2013 season. So we're talking like Xbox 360 generation. Okay. This is several generations ago. And yes, there was like online capabilities then, but you didn't have as much post-launch modification done by the gaming companies themselves. So especially mostly with that game. So like now that we live in a world where it's easy, it's almost routine for games to update, you know, companies to update games as they go along. Like, I don't know what that means for like college football. Like, do they alter the rankings based off of like week to week? I can't imagine that's going to be the case. But they've talked about the possibility of FCS teams being downloadable content. Obviously, mods are big in any kind of gaming industry, so everyone gets their fingers on them and makes it what they want. There's a billion possibilities, and we don't know exactly what it is. But Hurst, I feel like, well, I know you and I were Dynasty guys, and I feel like that's what most people are. But you get your hand on the game for the first time in 10 years. What's the first thing that you are going to do?
It's going to be start a Dynasty with Mizzou and play as Luther Burden and return kicks and punts. Just do that until, you know, my wife leaves me or I've won a national championship, whichever comes first. I'm not sure which one that will be.
So when you've done Dynasty in the past, are you a Mizzou first and then trickle out later? Or do you take after ran scrappy G5 teams and try and make them powerhouses?
I'm definitely both. This is now 10, 11 years ago, but whenever I would get a new version of the game, I bought the new version every year from 2003 on PS2. Mm-hmm. Or actually, 2002 is 2003 game, but it was in 2002 mm-hmm. through 2014. So I would always get, at the time in 2002, I wasn't a Mizzou fan, barely knew that they existed. So I instead created my high school team from scratch and played them as a D1 team. Nice. That's a whole new level of nerd. Since 2004, started at Mizzou, win as many national championships until I got bored. Usually it took me about 10 seasons of winning a champion national championship every year. Then I would switch to the most garbage program at the time in my dynasty. So I would just quit the job. I wouldn't start a new dynasty. I would just quit the job and say, oh, UMass needs a coach, or UTSA is a fun one at the time. They're a little better program now than they were 10 years ago. But I loved UMass because they played – I'd find like crappy teams that played in big stadiums, and UMass played at in Foxborough at the Patriot Stadium. So I could fill that thing out and make my atmosphere the top, you know, top rated. And UTSA was the same way. Take the worst team at the time, Old Dominion, and then get them all the way up to win several national championships within. Then do the same thing again, get bored, quit that job, find a new worst team. Probably by that point, like a Kent State or something, and just repeat the process until the next year has passed and the next game comes out, and start the whole thing over again.
Yeah. Well, that's good. I will only do Mizzou as like my retirement job. I do that once my created coach is like 55, 60 years old. And I go, okay, time to win one for the old alma mater. I maxed out on everything. I can fart my way through the entire season. Let's do this. And it's great. I love it. But yeah, I have played almost every single team that you can possibly be. I have been a dynasty team for all of them. I haven't done Buffalo. Obviously all the new teams since 2014, I've not done, but I have not done Buffalo. I've not done Kent State. And I have not done San Jose State. And so when the new game comes out, I'm going to pick one of those three. I Kennesaw State's going to be brand new, so they're going to stink. And I'm really hootie hoo. I kind of really want to play the Owls and just be bad, make them really good. But I got to pick the worst team in the game. And I got to grind my way up, baby. You got to start as a GA and earn it. So that's what I try and do. And it's a lot of stupid fun. The last dynasty that I'm in the middle of and have not touched for quite some time, I took New Mexico State to the Rose Bowl as a Conference USA participant. So that was probably one of my favorites. It's going to be fun. This is we've got 10 years of Mizzou players that we have not been able to play as. Think about how many guys that is. You know, you never got to play as Drew Locke, for example. That's a travesty. You never got to play as Nick Bolton.
Yeah, that's guy I think of. I'd love to just engage eight with Nick Bolton coming right up the middle.
Depending on what you did with 13, you might have had Charles Harris in your file. I created him and made sure he was on there. He was like a true freshman on that 13 team. There's just a lot of guys that we missed out on. And so I'm excited to get back into the game. I'm a healthy skeptic because I know that the quality of football games isn't always the best, but at the same time, nostalgia and just the topic is going to, it's going to paper over a lot of those warts for a long time. Probably until the new edition comes out the following July. So I'm very excited about that. So you're going to be Mizzou. I'll probably pick Buffalo, frankly, and then try to use all my NIL and steal someone's really awesome quarterback and, you know, be awesome. So that's going to be my plan.
Yeah. That's one of the interesting things. I'm very curious to see how they work in is NIL into the whole recruiting process. Obviously I'm sure they'll include the transfer. The players could transfer in the 2014 game, but it almost never happened. And it was always really bad players. So I'm very curious to see what the mechanics of that will be in this new game. And will it work? Will it just be super crazy? Which I guess it's super crazy in real life, so that wouldn't be that far from the truth. But like NIL, because you couldn't really cheat by having a bag man throw cash at a player in 2014. But you know, how do you have to sweet talk donors during the week to get them to pony up? How does that work? Very curious to see if and how they incorporate that.
Yeah. But they had the race for the Heisman, which is a mode. I think there's a lot of iterations of this, but you basically create a player it was almost always yourself. And you tried to get your player to win the Heisman. And so you had to allocate your time in one of the versions during the week to like studying or like going to parties or hitting the playbook. I can very easily see a coach like go to golfing event. you know, suck really bad, lose 5,000 NIL dollars because some guy thinks you're a hack. You know, say, get caught on a hot mic that you, you know, said, you said something stupid. Like, there's a lot of fun you can have with it. I don't know how much, like, the developers, the guys who are making the game, know about the culture and therefore know about, like, this sort of stuff. I do know, because he reported on himself, that college football reporter Stephen Godfrey, who is deep with the bag, man, he is a kind of a dirty underbelly reporter of college football. They hired him on as a consultant. So I'm really hoping that he's got some good stuff on the shadier side of our beloved sport to work into the game. But, of course, we're not going to find out what that is until a couple months from now. And you know what? We just turned one of the slowest news weeks of spring football into an hour show. I am proud of everybody here, which is just me and you, buddy. Let's give them some parting shots. Nathan Hurst, what are you saying as we get the heck out of here?
I'm actually ready. I never say this. I'm ready to go see a spring game here in a week and a half coming up. I haven't been to one in person in probably 10 years because I've had no motivation to, but I mean, not just the fact that I do this podcast at Rifle Rock M now, but I'm actually legitimately excited for this next year's team to see this roster come together. And will we learn anything? Probably not, but I'm actually excited to go and be for row again. So, you know, I'm just kind of counting down the days. I'll bring the 5-year-old. He'll have a blast. Maybe they'll have a moonwalk or something I can toss him on and watch the game for a little bit, but yeah. It'll be fun. So I'm just, you know, I'm sure we'll have one more of these to talk about that game before it happens. I'm just kind of waiting and ready for it to get here.
You and me both, man. March 16th is Black and Gold Game, March 16th. So put that on calendars if you haven't already. That's the show for today. As always, we appreciate the downloads and the subscriptions. You can leave a comment or you can rate us. We love all types of feedback from you all. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Nate G. Edwards. He's at Burst to Hurst. And, of course, you can follow the Rockin' flagship at Rockin' Nation and our podcasting outlet at Rockin' Radio. We appreciate you tuning in this time. We'll try to do better next time. And until then, M-I-Z.
C-O-U.
Thank you, everyone, for tuning in to Rock M Radio, a proud partner of Fans First Sports Network. If you enjoyed this episode and would like to see more just like it beamed directly into your personal device, just click the subscribe button below. Beep. And you can find this podcast through the Apple Podcasts app or for iPhone or the Google Podcasts app for Android or whatever app you use to listen to your podcast. We are also available on Spotify. Just search for Rock M Radio. And if you like other sports, Fans First Sports Network is a podcast network that has coverage of all other teams, Major League Baseball, MLS, NFL, whatever you want to listen and read about. It is a great, great network full of really fantastic podcasts. So look them up and subscribe to any and all of those podcasts. Rock M Radio will be back with more episodes coming soon. Thanks.